Welcome to Pickle Me This, the officially unofficial podcast for Rick and Morty on Cartoon Network's Adult Swim. I'm your host, Jim.
And I'm Aaron.
You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. This week, we're covering Season 5, Episode 5 of Mordekin Graffiti. Here's Aaron with the recap.
Rick takes Jerry out to Guy's Night. Apparently, Rick owes some demons from hell big, and their greatest pleasure is experiencing pain. Jerry's constant cringe output keeps him at a level of orgasmic bliss. Soon, Beth tries to put a stop to this indirect bullying of Jerry, which eventually leads to three of them being drugged straight to hell. Meanwhile, Morty invites a new kid at school, Bruce Chutback, over to his house. The new kid doesn't know how lame the Smith kids are, so Morty and Summers sees this as a chance to get in on a ground floor cool opportunity. In an attempt to make the Chut cut, they show off Rick's car, which, of course, leads to multiple genocides. Will Beth and Rick be able to save Jerry from the clutches of sadomasochistic hellspawn? Will Rick smell adventure on his car and freeze Morty and Summers' dicks in amber? Find out on this episode of Pickle Me This. All right, Jim, what did you think of a Mordekin Graffiti?
It was all right. Probably better than last episode, but I wasn't like super impressed with this one, even though, look, I'm a big Hellraiser fan. I've seen several of those movies, not all of them, because there are like 10 of them, so fuck me. But I thought they didn't do enough with the concept. I kept expecting, I kept waiting for like, okay, yes, they feed on Jerry's cringe, that's funny, but also there's got to be one more layer to this, and there just wasn't. So, yeah, I don't know. I came away from it going, oh, that was good, but I was kind of looking for something a little bit more.
Yeah, I thought this was a return to form. I thought this was it felt like a classic season two kind of mid-season episode. I like the ship stuff, the Rick ship stuff. I like the Hellraiser stuff. Maybe I guess I haven't thought as deeply about the ramifications, but I just like the... When Rick said, yeah, I know your guys' stick, it's like you're like Oscar the Grouch. That just got the biggest laugh out of me because the exquisiteness of the pain. You don't know what it feels to have your flesh flint. It is so fucking stupid because I don't know. I just thought that stuff was really funny. And like Rick's attempt to parrot it back and then his pain inverter, converter, reverter or whatever.
Right.
That made the pain turn into actual real pain and the demon's reaction to it. I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah, it wasn't quite the twist I was looking for, but I do think the jokes were good. And I liked, you know, all the Chutback stuff. That was hilarious. It was really just like, I guess I'm looking for Rick and Morty to blow me away each week, which might not be fair, but that they've kind of set a standard, right? And if they can't live up to a week after week, I'm going to be slightly disappointed, though. Like I said, it was better than last week, and I enjoyed it.
You know, if this episode didn't jack the gym, then what are you going to do? It's sacred obligation and duty. So I thought it was real funny. And again, I just thought the Demons from Hell stuff was funny. I've never heard that kind of sci-fi contradiction blown up before. And it was really funny. Plus the designs on those guys were fucking A++++.
I love the designs on Rick and Beth when they go into
just Marlin Guts.
Marlin
Guts
and Dartboard Face.
Or something like that. That's what he assumes their names are.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it's pretty good. And because I was starting to get worried last episode, like, geez, maybe they have lost the magic, but this stuff felt very Dan Harmon, felt very Justin Roiland, had some great Dan songs, which I think are always fun. The highlight of many a Harmontown. What do you think? We should just get into the episode?
I think so.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
We've got lots of ongoing coverage this week, from book versus show comparisons for Hot D to the latest very special episode of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? But there are a couple of main events this week you need to know about.
Firstly, we've got a brand new commission podcast out this Tuesday covering The Raid 2, sometimes subtitled Retaliation. If you're a fan of martial arts films, this is one you don't want to miss. Iko Uwe is a rising star in the action movie world, and it's easy to see why. Join us on Tuesday as we dive into the bigger, badder sequel to The Raid, try and figure out which is better.
Then on Thursday, we're covering the season finale of Hulu's excellent period drama, Shogun. We've been waiting all season to see what Toranaga Sama's plan is, or if he even has one. It all comes down to this, and we couldn't be more excited. Join us on Thursday for what's sure to be an epic Shogun season finale podcast, and to find out if we plan to cover any related materials.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
Getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off badass season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Let's talk about the Hellraiser plot first. There's a lot going on with Beth's horse doctor career. It seems like they're really centering that again, and I'm not sure why, because that was kind of like a throwaway joke in the show's old canon that, like, Beth is kind of, you know, essentially dropped out of medical school to have Summer, and so she couldn't be a full doctor. She's a horse doctor. But do you think they're going anywhere with that? The fact that they've really centered her employment back into the center of the show's consciousness.
Maybe. I don't know.
Centered the word center in my vocabulary. Jesus. Speaking of cringe, I was really floundering there.
Yeah, that's all right. I don't know. I thought it was funny. A couple of the horse jokes. You know, it's horses don't take long to give birth once they go into labor, right? Mm-hmm. And the idea that, you know, you could play, what was it, Barry White,
yeah, PA over racetrack speakers. Yeah, just gets love is in the air.
And then just, I can imagine, like, they didn't even need to draw that scene, right? The words that they use paint a picture in my mind.
Yeah. I also thought the design of the scene device, like the way they like dark chuckle and like would glow with like purple energy, I thought that was really funny. And there's like this comedy of threes thing where it's like Jerry rolls up and makes an ironic joke. Well, a sincere joke about his wardrobe. They have a light chuckle, light glow. And as he gets more and more cringy, they like laugh harder and glow harder. I thought that stuff was just really funny until it finally led up to him sticking his head out after he ducked in to give Rick an opportunity to bring us in on the joke, and says, hey guys, guess what? They got the entire Smash Mouth catalog and the like huge uproarious hysterical purple laughing. So here's the thing. I love when the show takes pot shots and we've talked about it. Sometimes it hits close to mark. I don't actually like Smash Mouth that much. I think they're, All-Stars fun, right? No one hates that song, right? But why single out Smash Mouth fans? Like, if you're Smash Mouth at home, I think this would be hilarious if I was Smash Mouth. But like, if you're Smash Mouth out, you got to feel like, God, where I was just sitting here eating Cheetos on my couch and you come at me, Rick and Morty.
I guess because they didn't think of Fred Durst. I don't know. I don't know, man. yeah, there's a lot of bands you could take shots at. I think the band they did take a shot at was pretty good. With the song he does sing, that one.
Oh my God! I feel like that's worth the price of admission. This episode alone,
the concept of
being in a karaoke bar and that fucking song starting up, and being like, you'd mean they look up and think that's the biggest douchebag I've ever seen. Like it's either a drunk asshole. Someone is trying to be ironically funny, but it's like there's no way. I don't know what kind of fucking charisma.
No, that joke's
you'd
too
have
long.
To have to pull that off. Yeah,
right.
Oh, it goes on and on forever. like if you could like tell the karaoke guy, okay, time out. I just wanted the first 30 seconds. Okay, play my real one. But like to do the whole fucking thing.
Yeah.
But the next level thing, I guess, the thing that you were expecting to do, Hellraiser, they did with the song. Oh yeah, was have it be an unironic like montage music to. Like Ferris Bueller style hijinks, intergalactic hijinks with Rick and Morty and
the Joyride, right? Know, from the title,
the Joyride
of Morty Kin Graffiti.
Graffiti, yeah. I thought that was.
I didn't know those were the lyrics. I didn't know the song had lyrics other than "Oh yeah."
Same.
Because I think I've only ever heard it in Ferris Bueller's Day Off. But
obviously I heard it in lots of the 80s and 90s stuff, but yeah, it's always just oh yeah, and Bow Chicka Wow, you know, right, the Bow Chicka Chicka. Right.
It's the thing that everybody knows about it. But apparently it does have lyrics. I was looking at the Wikipedia article for this. Oh, and those are the lyrics, by the way. Like, you know, you looked those up before the show and told me those were the lyrics. I'm like, fuck you, no way.
No, we had a series of mind blowers where I said, it's like, that was hilarious. And it's like, plus who knew it had lyrics about the moon and the sun? He's like, oh no, those are fake Jerry lyrics. Like, you know, Beth was making fun of him. And I'm like, oh my God, they might be, because how the hell do I not know this? And then that led us to Wikipedia. And what did we discover, Joe?
Yeah, you looked it up. Those are, in fact, the lyrics. He's not making those up or mistaking those. Then I looked at the production notes on this song in Wikipedia, and it is wild, man. I guess these guys have to be like German or something. I mean, their fucking names are Dieter and stuff, so
yeah, Dieter Meter, I think, is the guy's name that wrote this. That's fucking German AF,
right? And Boris Blank, so like they're probably not native English speakers, but this is let me just read the production notes to you. It's one paragraph,
please.
All right. Describing the composition of Oh Yeah, Blank said, first I did the music and then I invited Dieter to sing along, and he came up with some lines which I thought, no, Dieter, it's too complicated. We don't need that many lyrics. I had the idea of just
No, Dieter, too many lyrics.
I had the idea of this guy, a fat little monster, sits there very relaxed and says, oh, yeah. So I told him, why don't you just try to sing on and on? Oh, yeah. Dieter was very angry when I told him this, and he said, are you crazy all the time? Oh yeah, are you crazy? I can't do this. No, come on. And then he said some lyrics like the moon, beautiful, is this too much? And I said, no, it's okay. And then he did this oh yeah, and at the end he thought, yeah, it's nice. He loved it himself also. And also I wanted to install lots of human noises, all kind of phonetic rhythms with my mouth, which is the chicka-chicka part. Yeah.
Lots of mouth sounds.
It's wild, man. That's barely an intelligible paragraph, but it kind of describes exactly how you think the process of making this song would go.
Yeah. So let's talk about the theme of this section of the episode.
Yeah.
Trying to segue away from, oh yeah. There's something that the demon says when they drag Jerry to hell. That cringe in a vacuum is nothing, which is true. Like, if you have if the planet had one person on it, there could be no cringe, because what is he going to do? Sure. Like, pick his butt and smell it?
Well, I mean, the cringe comes from the earnesty, right? But if you're earnest,
I thought the cringe comes from the lack of self-awareness of what you're doing is not cool. So, like, there's no one to judge you, then, you know, scratching your crack and sniffing it is the best thing to do. It's the only thing to do. Like, you're what you're doing, everything that person does is by definition normal and cool.
It's true.
If the second you add a person, it's like, what the hell are you doing scratching your ass and smelling it, you fucking smelly piece of shit? Then you got the cringe factor. And I thought that was a pretty astute observation. There was, I watched this, like, there was like a 90-minute video that this ContraPoints lady came up with on cringe, and analyzing Twitter culture and stuff. And it made this exact same point. But it's really fun. Like, this reframing that actually the least cool thing you can do is judge other people for being cool.
All right.
Where do you subscribe to that take? Is there a limit to that take? Because, like,
oh, sure. Like, when a billionaire blasts off into space and says best day ever, and everybody else is down here dealing with not the best day ever, that's cringe.
That's pretty cringe.
Yeah.
There's lack of awareness. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Of other people's condition.
For sure.
You can't humble brag about blasting off to space on the power of your personal fortune. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like Tony Stark posing by a corpse of Thanos, throwing a peace sign saying, you know, it's just not, I don't know. Maybe that gets a million Instagram likes.
Oh, I'm sure it does, because cringe sells on Twitter and on TikTok shit. So,
yeah. Do you think, because I try to think, like, where do I draw the line? Because, like, I like to be the type of guy that's like, well, as long as I'm not hurting anybody, right? You know?
Sure.
But on the other hand, like, there are costs to being a fucking weirdo. And I do think that there is, like, benefits to, like, knowing, you know, what are the social signals to send out to the other primates that I'm part of the pack. I can be trusted with things like mortgage payments and children. And you don't have to worry about me, because I'm just a regular old hairless ape. I got regular old hairless ape tastes, and I'm not going to do anything too fucking crazy. But you don't have to do that. But there's utility in being able to at least, you know, do the old handshake negotiation of things. And, like, I do worry sometimes that we're losing that. Like, there's so much hyper individual, like, that they're like, the fact you can't tell somebody, would you just fucking stop being annoying? You're acting weird. And it's off putting and making people feel uncomfortable. Like, I think you should be able to say that about, I don't know, sticking your hands on your pants, scratching your ass cheek, and then, like, smell it in the middle of McDonald's. Like, that should be something that we can still label as cringe.
That's just unhygienic. Yeah, I feel you. It's like, is there room to embarrass people for their behavior in like, ways that are constructive?
At the karaoke, you should have ended at the DJ. He should have been like, dude, you can't. I'll play 30 seconds for the joke,
right?
But I can't do the whole thing because it's not going to be funny.
Right.
So, like, maybe the DJ is a cringe guy, but, like, we need to enforce some level of cringe. I think.
Well, if we're going to do it, I don't think DJs are the ones who should be the arbiters of cringe.
Of good taste.
Arbiters of cringe. No, although that's just a hell of a DJ name. DJs. Arbiter of cringe.
Oh, cringe arbiter? Hell yeah. Yeah, we get the DJs and fucking promoters. That's who we need to judge what's
sure.
Justice society.
The world would be a better place, I'm sure.
Yeah. I wonder, like, Jerry, you know, we chronicle his patheticness a lot in this podcast. It seems like he came around pretty quick to his wife and father-in-law just clowning on him in front of demons. He's just so, I mean, I guess that's one of the reasons he's so cringe, right? Is that all Beth has to do is point out, like, well, you know, Jerry, I have sex with you, right? And all is right in his world,
right?
Like, he doesn't need respect or
being
love
disrespected
or
everywhere else.
But on the other hand, it's like, does Jerry need respect? Does he deserve respect?
I think everybody needs some respect to be able to respect themselves. I don't know if he deserves it.
It seems like it only bums. What I'm saying is, it seems like it only bums him out when other people point it out that he's not respected. Fair. Like, otherwise, he's just oblivious and it doesn't, it, you know, it's a, seems like it's coping mechanism. People around is like, this guy is so fucking oblivious. You can just do anything you want. And he just laughs it off. And he's so lame that you almost have to, you have to like beat him with a stick once a day just to justify putting up with him. Cause it's like, oh, that felt good. It's really weird and twisted. I don't know.
Yeah. This whole episode is weird and twisted.
Don't you feel like since season four, they've tried to kind of talk us into like Beth being authentically in love with Jerry. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah. I just don't know that it's working for me. It feels real toxic.
Yeah. I mean, when she defended Jerry from Rick, right. Which was like, yeah, two seasons ago or something. It's been a while.
Yeah.
And then, you know, kind of put Rick in his place in the family as like second class citizen, or, you know, not the guy who's going to run the show. That felt like a turning point, but you're right. It's like, is that going to stick? I guess we have a lot of Rick and Morty to go. That dynamic will probably change once or twice more, at least.
Yeah. And I, you know, we always talk about like, it is kind of realistic for people to backslide, but I also think in relationships, it's also not uncommon for, especially if you haven't been in a lot of relationships with, we know Rick and or Beth and Jerry haven't, to like the, when things get scary or like you start articulating the thought, oh God, I think we should break up, that scares you into recommitting. Like, oh my God, but I'll lose the love of my life. What a blah, 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 blah. And yeah. Like, I wonder if there's going to be these multiple stages of like, oh, well, we almost bailed, but we didn't. So now we got to be really invested about being in love. And then, you know, it's that,
yeah,
that part's going to burn
hotter
and
faster.
You
don't feel it, right? It's like,
exactly. Yeah. And it'll just burn that initial enthusiasm will just burn through even quicker. So
for sure.
I don't know.
Yeah. Things it's have like, to change. Like I said, it can't stay stagnant because that's not interesting.
Yeah. It's like, like stellar evolution. They say that like the sun starts as a ball of hydrogen and then as it burns and fuses everything to helium, then the next stage it goes faster and faster until it goes supernova. And yeah. I feel like that's the Smith marriage right now. It burned through its main sequence of hydrogen round season three. It's currently burning a white hot core of helium. And it's going to fuse that shit and then be on, I don't know, fucking oxygen. I exhausted my chart of the elements already.
Does
so
it have to do with density? I don't even know.
Get neon. I don't know when it's going to go supernova, but we'll see. Mm. Is there anything else we want to talk more about this? Like I said, a lot of the Hellraiser stuff is just funny. Like Rick building the what was the exact? I wrote it down because I thought just the. I love the verbal dexterity of like really good BoJack Horseman where they'd have like a couple paragraph long, like internal pun rhymes. Those things really, I think are funny. But I know I wrote, oh yeah. The aversion conversion inverting reverter.
Yeah. That's the machine.
I fucking loved it. Yeah. I fucking loved it. And then it runs on 100% sincerity.
Yeah.
Do you remember, like, I think 10 years ago when we were doing the Blue Yonder podcast, one of the first podcasts we did, we actually had an episode about, I think, the death of irony that we predicted, like, sometime soon. Because, like, the irony has been so, and it's been played out for going on decades now.
Yeah.
That there'll be a new social movement of, like, just sincerity. And I thought when Mr. Rogers died and like there's all these documentaries and then Tom Hanks did, like, I thought like we were seeing like, you know what? Sincerity is cool. Mm-hmm. And being that kind of like wholesome level of like, no dissembly. And they're just going to say what you mean. And what? And then the pandemic hit. And I think we missed it. I think it's going to be irony for another at least three decades.
Yeah.
It's like an ironic groundhog came out, saw its fucking shadow. And we got two more generations of this shit. But I don't know, because like how much more can we just like pretend that it's cool to not care about things and it's cool to have this kind of detached slack jaw effect like with the Chut back stuff and let people project your insecurities onto it. I
guess until enough people are affected by the things that they pretend are not problems that they can't be ignored. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be interesting when we get over the long, ironic winter, because we'll wake up to some legit problems that are no longer able to be ignored.
Oh, the hangover the irony binge is rough. It's rough. Oof.
Lasts a long time.
I will say, I think it's hilarious that he has to hook one of these Cenobites up to that machine, because if you look around the room, none of these fucking people, nobody in here, like, tell me, aside from Jerry, who's in captivity, like, they're trying to save, who here is equipped to give honest earnestness into this machine? Anybody? Beth?
Nobody.
No, fuck no. Morty? Summer? Uh-huh. Rick? Hell no. Nobody in this family is honest except for Jerry.
So what powered it? Because, like, that's the thing I want to see. I think I know the answer, but I want to see what you think of it. What actually powered this sincerity machine, the pain converter?
Oh, it was, I guess I don't know exactly what you mean. It was one of the Cenobites, right?
Right, but, like, I thought when I first watched it that it was Rick's sincerity that jump-started the machine, but I think it's the demons judging him is what it did, powered it. Like, when the demon said, nerd, like, he said this insane,
gotcha,
or this sincere thing, and then the demon says, nerd.
Yeah.
And then I think that's what was happening.
Yeah, you're probably right. The machine was hooked up to the Cenobite, so it's definitely not, like, yeah, Rick putting the energy in there, but, like, I don't think Rick can keep that up, right? Like, he would implode if he tried even one more little fragment of that earnest sentence.
Well, that's why. Do you think that he meant what he said at the end of the episode, that, like, because he's like, Jerry, I got to talk to you about something, and Jerry's like, oh, there's, you don't need to tell me how you really feel, and Rick's like, no, this is a one-time thing. I am never, next time you pull this shit, I'm just going to replace your ass, and no one will ever. Do you think that is, because the way they played it, where Jerry's kind of like, oh, I got it, Captain. And then that pain, it goes to Rick's face. And that wasn't a face of like, no, Jerry, I'm actually going to kill you next time. It was kind of like a face of resigned to him being right.
Yeah, I think the way that Beth feels about Jerry, like, he's got to please Beth, right? That's the only thing he really does care about is Beth. And it's hard to get to that in Rick because it's buried so deep. But, like, he does care about Beth and she cares about Jerry. So, you know, that he says those credits don't transfer, but they do in a very real way. They have to, because if he cares about Beth, he's going to do what he can to save the people that she loves.
OK, if Beth dies.
Oh, shit. All bets are off.
All bets are off. Well, because I'm like, I think that the credits do transfer to Morty and Summer.
I think,
but
so,
like, yeah, if, like, Summer, Morty and Beth are all killed somehow, sure, uh-huh, and it spares Jerry, I feel like Rick probably does something a little special to Jerry.
I mean, he just goes to an alternate dimension and replaces the family, right?
Yeah, like, I guess that's true.
I don't. Yeah, he wouldn't give a shit enough about Jerry to go take some kind of revenge on him.
Yeah, that's you're right. It's like it'd be like Don Draper. Like, I don't even think of you at all.
Right.
It's like, I don't have to worry about any of your shit anymore, Jerry. Unless Jerry's the one that caused all their deaths by being a dumbass or being malicious.
Maybe.
But yeah, you're right. I think you're right. Rick just wouldn't fucking care enough about it.
Yeah.
What do you think about it entering the canon that Jerry shit his pants from eating too warm a soup on too cold a day?
Okay. As someone who doesn't eat soup very frequently, can you explain this to me? Is this where does the writer's room come up with this? Is this personal experience? Is this completely fabricated? There's got to be a nugget of truth in there, right?
You know, this does sound like someone trying to justify a time they shit their pants.
Yes.
And they're like desperate. They're desperate for some justification. They're like, dimly remember in elementary school, I don't know if this is real or not. Like, it was always the myth, the urban legend, that the first kid that goes to sleep at a sleeping party You get a bowl of warm water.
Yes.
You put their hand in it and they wet their pants. Right.
Sure.
I don't know if that's true because it never actually happened. That it was always something to talk about. But, you know, I never hated my friends enough to do it. But I think it's like one of those where it's like, oh, well, I didn't shit my pants. I just ate, you know, it was super cold outside. I ate some warm. And it's like, you know, when you put your hand in the warm and you, it has to be something like that. It's bullshit. But what are you going to do? Just say I shit my pants?
Yeah, I don't know. I've never heard of this. They're making some shit up. They're telling some tales here in Rick and Morty.
Yeah, let's talk about cutting the chud.
Okay.
I like this because this is a very keen observational humor that's a real thing. Like when a new kid comes, unless you can immediately sort them into loser or like chat, like, you know, if this kid comes in the seventh grade and he's 6'2", he's got like a fucking Barbie Ken doll, tan and great hair and, you know, store-bought brand name clothes, then, oh, guess what? This kid's going to probably get sorted into the in crowd. You know, some guy, a kid, you know, shows up looking like, I don't know, fucking Pigpen from the Peanuts. He's probably going to get sorted into the lame-o crowd. Mm-hmm. But there is those kids that are kind of like, you know, they show up and they're wearing like, I don't know, jeans and a polo or something, and no glasses, no braces, hair medium cool, and people are just like, you know, what's this kid gonna do? It's like the start of Hamilton. And yeah, it captured that. And also, if you've been an unpopular kid that like formed a new friendship with somebody and it's like, oh yeah, it's gonna hit off, and then they got to know that you were not cool, and then they left, like they turned the cold shoulder on you. This part of it felt like really real and thus funny.
Oh yeah. I mean, new kid in school dynamics are vast and complicated. I've been the new kid in school a few times, and it's kind of like if I'm Chut, I'm thinking, oh hell yeah, I got an opportunity here to define myself anew to these people, right? Because look, I grew up in a cult, and so you know, that information gets out to your classmates eventually. It has to.
Yeah.
And then when that happens,
over the head.
Yeah, it's a thing. You're marked with it, right? So you go to the new school and you're like, oh man, I've got an opportunity here. These people don't know anything about me. I can be whoever I want. It's
no one knows I don't celebrate Christmas here. Yeah.
Right. I mean, I have at least until one of their birthdays to be the normal kid in school. That's cool. I was identifying a little bit with Chut here, although he's definitely a weirdo in his own right. I mean, it's not the pants that like turned me off about him. It's more like he comes in judging you instead of the other way around. I don't know what was going on with Chut.
Yeah, just like the ship's litany against him, like he's a sociopathic military brat who goes around the world changing people that don't need changing. That seemed like looking at the wrong end of the telescope. But there is something about, like, I imagine from Chet's perspective, if you've gone to like four or five schools, you probably, when you're younger, you probably had a miserable experience, you know, like you accidentally blew milk out your nose and everyone laughed, and then, or like you forget, like, oh God, you know, like all the weird pitfalls. Like at the end, the stinger of this episode is they find out that Chet or Bruce wore pants, the same pants twice in a row.
Right.
Like that's the stupidest fucking, like adults hang up their clothes and wear them multiple times. If you wash your clothes every single time you wore, and I just want, you know, like you're going to wear your clothes out real, real fast.
Sure.
And they're going to get faded and shit. But like, that's a little game we play. We pretend like, oh, you know, we have, look at all the clothes we have. We're not poor. We can go at least 2 weeks before you see us in the same outfit. It's this fun shit. Like, and it's funny because like I also got a 14-year-old like Morty who's learning all this shit. And I tell him like, hey, you can't go out looking like that. And he's like, why not? It covers all my naughty bits. It is appropriate for the climate. What's wrong with this, father? And I'm like, well, it's stripes and it's plaid. The colors clash. You got brown fucking shoes with a black belt. This like, and he's like, what are all these fucking arbitrary? But like, it I'm is. Him, it's man. A fucking social landmine.
I'm with him. Fuck it. Who needs it? Just go out in two tones of plaid, running vertical stripes on your shirt and horizontal on your pants. I don't give a fuck. I mean, you'll be labeled a weirdo. You're right, for sure.
That's what he says. And I always say, son, it's about signaling the other monkeys that you're part of the pack. Okay.
That's true.
And to the extent that you want to do that, the extent that more monkeys will accept you as one of their own.
Maybe he wants to be a mime. Maybe, I mean, if you dress for the job you want, maybe he just wants to be a mime.
Yeah, he wants to be an orangutan among chimpanzees, I guess. We'll see how it goes for him. But like all this, and like the way that I also thought it was really funny the way Morty and Summer were dealing with him behind the scenes, like it was something from Glengarry Glen Ross. Like they got a high pressure client, like, oh my God, I'm flopping out there. Jesus Christ, I'm dying. I need some fucking oxygen.
Yeah.
It's just really, really funny.
Yeah, that was good. I didn't get the Allison Hannigan thing. It's why is it Allison Hannigan? Just cause?
Yeah, I thought. I don't know. Like, I thought, oh my God, is Allison Hannigan the voice of Rick's ship? And I've just never realized it. No, that's not the case. Yeah. Did it look like Allison Hannigan? Not particularly.
No.
Was Allison Hannigan doing an impersonation of it? No, they. I think it's. Maybe it's a joke that like she was supposed to. I wonder if it's got to be some kind of like inside lore. But I didn't see any behind the episode and I didn't see any of my research, like anybody calling it out. But like, it's weird.
It's Allison really weird.
No relation.
But it felt like they were trying to manufacture some catchphrases, you know, like show me what you got. Like fuck the Chut was a pretty good one.
Fuck the Chut. Cut. It just doesn't cut this night. Hey, I want to be honest. I try not to express much of an opinion, but this night is not cutting the Chut.
Mm-hmm.
It's great. We got our first appearance of a credits sequence. Summer smashing the mailboxes from the ship is one of those things we saw in the intro and we speculated about what.
Right.
So if you had that on your bingo card, throw your red Chut. Chut, whatever on it.
Yeah, then it comes back afterward. You know, you think that's funny, huh? And then the mailboxes come in a spaceship and beat Bruce to tears on the sidewalk.
Yeah, right after he went from cool kid to lame-o, and then he got the physical beating to go with his emotional one. I don't know. I like Rick's ship. This keep Summer safe is one of my favorite plot lines ever. And that callback and how much like the car just like loathes these children. Mm-hmm. Like it gives me a real I have no mouth, but I must scream vibe. Like this super intelligent sentient car that's kind of like in this weird like it's like almost an explicitly psychosexual relationship where she's like, you know, listen, the only way I do things is because Rick tells me to. And then when she's like, I've got to take a shower, Rick can smell adventure.
Mm.
Like that feels like someone who's, you know, tightly under thumb and maybe enjoys cucking somebody.
Yeah.
And again, just not like the show does weird things with sexual dynamics. So.
Oh, yeah. All the time.
Plus, like, you know, an object can have virginity, right? A doorknob can be a virgin.
Not Morty's.
So do you think Morty has fucked his doorknob, or do you think that he was trying to make the, like, in front of Chet or Bruce, an aggressive teenage male sex joke? And, you know, because there's a lot of jokes of, like, I'm so horny that I would, and he just miscalculated with, like, well, this is a...
Yeah,
this is more of a penetrative object than a penetrating object. And that's not the vibe we're going for in these ultra aggressive adolescent male sex jokes. So
I hadn't considered that, but you might be right. Although I thought the oh yeah stuff was that too, was like the second layer of the onion being peeled back. But that was not. That's just the lyrics. So maybe not. I don't know. I give them the benefit of the doubt. Yeah, it was.
The fucking doorknob. Pretty committed. Like it's if you're talking keyhole. That's something, but I mean, if you're talking like
how
bumping knobs,
yeah, I don't know girthy. How that works. It's
I wouldn't think that I wouldn't make that for my first experience. I wouldn't be easing into the world.
Just the height alone, like I don't know what kind of short ass doors he's sidling up to. I mean,
like,
but
I'm like 6'2", 6'3". I could probably make that work, but like Morty's got to get on like a milk crate or something
for sure. And then you run the risk of the door being opened, the doorknob being jiggled.
Oh my God. Yeah. Mom barges right? in on you and suddenly you're impaled and stuck to the wall.
Yeah.
Not good.
It's a bad scene.
But you get the twisting motion at first. So that's probably gives you, a bit of, a little bit of.
That's what I'm thinking. You lock the door, you let him jiggle the handle for a while.
Ah. Then you're involved. No, God, no. Then you're involving other people in your kinks. You know, it's like, oh, you got your roommate.
If they don't know,
he quote unquote locks himself in his room and then says, oh, God, guys, I'm trapped. I can't help me getting it. Then everybody takes turns tugging the knob. And we know what you're doing. Nice, sick fucks.
It's all fun and games till somebody goes The Shining. We got to help this kid. Axes you right through your ass.
Oh, my God. Did you like the Jurassic Park reference?
Uh-huh. Oh yeah, freeze your dicks in amber. That's great.
But like the this day is still when you go to an invalid page in a Bald Move website, you configured it to where Dennis Nedry comes up and does
Yep, didn't say the magic word.
Yeah, I thought you'd like that.
Oh yeah, Jurassic Park.
Asteroid pod racing. Asteroid pod racing with the testicle pods.
Uh huh.
Unexpected episode one homage.
I like that movie less than Jurassic Park for sure.
100%. I don't know, like the change former stuff, like
it was okay. I wasn't feeling that stuff. I don't know, the car's got to get hers, but whatever.
And I thought there was some I thought it was funny what Chut was saying about you know, well, he's a car, or he's a robot, and I'm a car. And he's, but he's a robot pretending to be a car. Why can't you be a car pretending to be a robot? I don't know. I thought some of that stuff was going to go places that didn't end up going, and they just like sharp turn into Rampage and Pandemonium. I did love when the car, like, buckle up, bitches, were going on a My Joy ride. Like, the first thing she does is she's trolling an entire solar system, and you're like, well, that's kind of fucked up. And then she's just trying to catch, like, a Galactus type to kill it, ultimately measure it, and I guess it's too small for a trophy and discard it. Rick's ship gets wild, man.
Yeah.
It makes you wonder how often they go off the res, like, how often have they blasted off without Rick's permission? Is this like the first time? Because like, what stops the car from just taking off on its own whenever Rick doesn't need it?
It might. I don't know. We just haven't seen it yet. I think it's the first time that Morty and Summer have gone joyriding in the car.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure.
But yeah, the car might go off and do her own thing all the time.
Yeah, I was wondering. It seems like it's the fear of Rick is in it pretty strongly.
True,
but. I don't know. More ship episodes. I really like Ship as a character. Do you think Ship will ever get a name?
No. That's just a wild ass guess. How about Mini Interdimensional Cable?
That was one of my next topics I want to talk about. They're really teasing us.
They sure are.
We got one, the hot sauce commercial. That's literally just like, that's the thing. It's a hot sauce commercial. You can't tell anything about it, but the world-class Olympic divers that can't swim, solid, but I need, they've got to give us an IDC. They've got to, they're begging the question on this so hard.
That might be the point. I don't know, man. I don't know. I have no faith that we'll get one this year.
Yeah, I haven't looked because like I've been trying to. I know there's a leaked episode. I'm trying to keep myself from watching that because I don't want to spoil myself and fuck up the podcast. And I've tried to not even look at the episode titles because I feel like that would either make me happier or disappointed. Because I think that if they follow the convention, the interdimensional cable episodes will be you'll be able to spot them a mile away from their title. But I don't know. Another piece of showkeeping. They used a portal gun. No fanfare, just in the cold open. Just portal, jump to the hell bar, and there is apparently no special thing about the portal gun not being used, being used. I didn't get real into the weeds with the speculations and stuff, but like, it feels like that has to be a pretty big blow to theory crafting.
I mean, yeah, if the theory was they're not using the portal gun for a reason.
Yeah.
And then they use it for no reason. Yeah, that seems pretty big.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, the very special isn't your speed. We've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd. We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R. R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts. FX is adapting James Clavell's best-selling novel, Shogun, into a 10-part miniseries this spring. Set in the shogunate period of Japan at the turn of the 15th century, Shogun depicts the rise of a feudal lord to Shogun, as seen through the eyes of a shipwrecked English sailor. It's loosely based on the real-life exploits of William Adams and Tokugawa Ieyasu.
Shogun has already been successfully adapted back in 1980 with a widely acclaimed miniseries starring Richard Chamberlain. Featuring intricate plots, political scheming, complex characters, and thrilling action. This time, husband and wife team Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo try to recapture the successes of the novel and early adaptations while increasing the levels of historical and cultural accuracy that are often perceived as flaws of this and similar works.
Starring Hiroyuki Sanada from The Last Samurai, Mortal Kombat, and John Wick 4, with Cosmo Jarvis of Peaky Blinders, Raised by Wolves, etc., joining the truly massive cast required to bring this complex world to life. Join Aaron and I each week as we deep dive into each episode, uncovering the mysteries, the intrigue, and the glory of Shogun.
Shogun premieres on FX Hulu Tuesday, February 27th, with a two-part debut. Our podcast will release each Thursday thereafter. Get our Shogun coverage by searching for Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. Okay, feedback. It's really easy to send us feedback. All you got to do is send an email to Rick and Morty at baldmove.com, and boom, we get it. First up, Jack says, hey guys, I'm a big fan of the podcast, but I'm curious, have you guys watched Community the whole way through to the end? Because I bet both shows are somehow carrying the same message. Have you seen Community?
Not Jim? All of it. I've seen, I don't know, a smattering of episodes here and there.
Okay, I thought maybe you'd seen a couple of seasons.
No, I don't
but
think so.
I'm a big Community fan. Rick and Morty was my entry point to Dan Harmon fandom. But after I got through the first two seasons and like watched every one of those like four or five times, I then got onto Community. And from there, I got into his podcast and like the whole fucking universe. But I've seen every Community episode at least two or three times.
Damn.
And that is, I don't know about the same message, but similar themes. You know, Harmon's the same guy, and he's at least half of Rick and Morty, probably the canonical continuity half. Also, they say on last week's episode, Rick Dependent Spray, do you have any opinion on why Morty would lie to Rick because of his shame?
or instead of his shame. I think they've been showing more and more how Morty has outgrown bowing down to Rick. I know you put it down to his feeling shame, but after everything we've seen Rick been through and all the off-screen implied shame Rick has identified to the family, surely Morty wouldn't care about Rick's opinions at this point. I'm curious about your thoughts on the two's current dynamic and if this felt authentic to you. So do you think just because Morty has a lot of inside information about Rick being terrible and doing a bunch of embarrassing, crazy ass things, fucking horse women, fathering illegitimate planet children, that he just doesn't care what Rick thinks?
I mean, to a degree. Yeah, we've seen Morty definitely stand up to Rick a time or two. And he does it in that episode too, right? I don't know. It seems to be one of those things where, like, at the beginning of a story, he'll stand up to Rick and say, "Now, fuck this, I do my own thing." Or, like, "I haven't been to school in 2 years. You're ruining my life," something like that. But then by the end of the episode, he'll be sort of, you know, had gone on a journey that blows his mind and kind of back in Rick's palms. I don't know. I don't think it's like inconsistent. It's just, you know, sometimes you have the willpower to stand up to people like that. Sometimes you don't. Sometimes you're embarrassed by the shit that they talk about you. Sometimes you're not.
Yeah, I mean, I think that when we're talking about fucking a horse jacking machine, and you're a 14-year-old kid and this is your grandfather, I think as Rick as your grandfather, I think that you'd still, even if you had a lot of high quality material over, because the other thing is also is mostly Rick doesn't give a shit. Like if you go hard at Rick, most like 99% of the time it rolls off his back because he just thinks he's cool and he doesn't subscribe to any of your criticisms. The 1% watch the fuck out, because then you've actually, you know, you kick the tiger in the ass, you got to deal with the teeth. But I don't, it's like one of those things where it's like, even if you had a nuclear arsenal like the size of Russia and you were, I don't know, India or Pakistan, you still wouldn't go after them because they don't, you know, like it's like they'd have a missile shield and you don't. So I feel like there's still like Rick lording it over his head that like, "Oh, what do you know, Morty? Last I knew, you're fucking a horse machine." That's still going to be mortifying. Him telling Summer, him like the way, I mean, think about like Rick, like how he behaves at school. Like sometimes he's like, why hasn't he pantsed Morty and like pushed him down the stairs? Like imagine Rick coming in a portal gun. "Come on, Morty, we gotta go. A quick in and out adventure." He's like, "Come on, Rick, I gotta." And he's like, "Oh, come on, what do you? We got better things to do. You're gonna fuck another horse jacker, Morty. You want that? You want that going in the cafeteria?" I don't think so. I feel like that's pretty mortifying. So, yeah, I'll give that one to Morty. All right, let's move on to Spencer. "I agree with your assessment of the latest episode of Rick and Morty." So this was Rick dependent spray we're still talking about. "Mm-hmm. It wasn't very funny, and it was a tad bit of a letdown. I'm trying to put my finger on exactly where it went off. I think I figured it out. It's the tone, from the writing to the delivery of the lines, everything felt off. For example, when Rick is explaining the weapon he's created against the Chuds to Morty, he's speaking very simply and the delivery of the lines is flat. Normally, that's a signal to the audience that Rick knows what's going on around him. In the Scammers episode, he goes along to simulation in the same manner of speech. He talks in a simple, flat tone as though he's not wasting any more brain power than he needs." Mm-hmm. Do you see what he's saying here? Like, you know, when he's saying like, "Well, Morty, I'm just analyzing the semen because, you know, the DNA," it sounds very similar to how he's behaving in the simulation when they're trying to get the...
Along, right? Because he already knows... He knows what's up and he's playing with you. Or getting like leading you along the path to admitting the thing that he already knows.
That's part of the show's language, is that when Rick is like this, he's being obtuse. Although sometimes it's just a setup of a joke. And here's where I think it's like, for example, do you remember in the episode with the devil, Rickful Things? Mm-hmm. He acts pretty obtuse when Morty's explaining him about the, "You can't use the R word anymore." He's like, "Well, Morty, I'm not saying anything about the differently abled. I'm just trying to express that this would actually reduce my mental capacity." He he says an exact same thing because, like, it's not Rick being obtuse. It's just Rick not being in on the joke so that the joke can land. And, like, this, I feel, is the same kind of way, because if Rick is like, sure, Morty, there's no little boy semen in here, I get what you're saying, wink, wink, well, then the rest of the episode's joke, to the extent that it is, doesn't land.
Right, right.
But anyway, that's what they said. It's like, my issue with this is it signals to the audience that Rick is in on the joke, just like we've been saying.
Hmm.
But this is never in what happens. It's never a payoff to the setup. At any rate, it didn't work for me. My wife had a theory that this episode is a mashup of three of the writers' worst ideas and previously discarded ideas. She thought it was a writer's challenge they took upon themselves to try and stitch a cohesive plot of three different bad ideas. Who's explained the second grade level writing and bland dialogue. I'm pretty sure we've talked in previous Rick and Morty's where that's literally what's happened, that they've had like two or three like story ideas that they kind of jammed together and they finally broke it. And they've also, I know, listening to the commentaries, that Harmon has said that a couple of the episodes kind of escaped before they personally were proud of them, or they had a lot of reservations and it ended up people loving it. So, like, I wonder if, like, what does it mean to hold an episode until it's hilarious? You know, like, if you say, like, you know, that Meeseeks episode, we were like really fucking nervous because we let that out there and we thought that was the dumbest fucking thing. We were so high when we wrote that episode. It never made sense when you're reading at the table, but we just had to, like, fuck it. The studio's like, we got to start animating. We're like, all right, animate it. And then it turned out to be people's favorites. Like, I don't know what do you do when the time out of 100, your gut just completely lets you down and you make a bad episode.
I don't know, man. I've always found that fascinating with comedy writing, because I can see a path to, like, drama where everything comes together and is satisfying and everything makes sense and clicks. But in comedy, it's so, like, I mean, comedy is the subversion of expectations, right? And so once you expect the joke that you've written, how do you then get yourself in the headspace to be subverted by it, to find it funny? How do you not just end up thinking all of your comedy sucks, like, 10 minutes after you write it, because
done to death,
right? You wrote the joke, you've heard the joke, you've thought about the joke, you've laughed at the joke 15 times, it's no longer funny, and yet you still got to put that out into the world and hope that everybody else feels the same about it as you did the moment you wrote it. That seems like a really hard emotional thing to do.
Because even if you grant that, like, at each stage it becomes funny and new, like, you're sitting at the writer's table and someone says something hilarious, and then you're like, okay, well, let's work it into the episode, and someone comes with the perfect way to work it into the episode, and that's hilarious again. And then you see, like, the rough draft of the visual, and it's like, oh, okay, I see what that's even funnier. And then, like, okay, let's get Justin in the booth and see it. And that line. Like, eventually you're arguing over frame timing of stuff to get it to the final thing. And, like, how the hell do you know any of this shit is funny? Like, the 17th time you've fucked with the timing or something like that.
I have no idea, man.
Same way, man. Like, the ability to get in your head. So, like, it's kind of remarkable when you see something like Rick and Morty or Community or, you know, The Office, any of these shows that just have a 90%+ record of hitting their episodes out of the park.
That's
like as much as you can't ask any show to be 100% perfect. So it's kind of amazing that Rick and Morty has had as few, like, real eggs as they have. That said, I think a lot of people have been on high alert ever since, you know, Justin and Dan got paid the big bucks to do a lot of stuff, and there's been, you know, they always make there's always headlines made about new writers being hired, but, like, that's a sign, man. Like, good writing rooms get rated for talent.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of the person, like, that wrote Pickle Rick is now show running her own show. Like, that stuff happens, and you got to be able to replace people. And usually, you know, like, that kind of, like, show room, writer's room doesn't really click into a couple seasons in. So, like, I just don't think it's, like, I see this episode and I saw Dan Harmon's fingerprints all over it.
Sure.
There's no way he's just kind of, like, checked the fuck out or is not showing up anymore, like a lot of people are afraid of. But I think every single time a bad episode happens, you're going to start hearing that, because it's the meme in the fandom now. So, but anyway, I think that Rick Dependence Day was just a bad Rick and Morty, and if they get. I'll start worrying when there's a couple of bad episodes, like two or three bad episodes in a season, and then the next phase of worrying will be when half of them are bad, and hopefully by in a season 10 they'll all be bad and we can stop watching it like with two seasons to go and move on with our lives. We'll see.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's what we got for Rick and Morty this week. Thank you so much for stopping by and spending your afternoon, your evening, your morning to meet with us. I hope you've added to your enjoyment of Rick and Morty this week. Next week we'll be back with another one. I have no idea. This is they're out of order still. Like, this was the sixth one supposed to be aired. It's the fifth one that actually was aired. The seventh one got leaked. I've been trying to stay out of spoilers and stuff, but I do know we will have a Rick and Morty episode next week. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about it then. If you'd like to send in a feedback, it's rickandmorty@baldmove.com. Thanks again for stopping by. Until next time, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
Pickle Me This is distributed and produced by Bald Move. All music featured on this podcast is from the Rick and Morty soundtrack, available from Sub Pop Records. Please subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. To discover the many other great shows we do, please check out baldmove.com.
If you appreciate what we do and want to directly support us, consider joining our club at patreon.com/baldmove
to get access to exclusive bonus audio and video features. Finally, you can follow us on your favorite social media @baldmove. See you next time.